Welcome to a 20-episode miniseries at the Texas Robotics Summit, hosted by our friends at Granite Defense. We dive into the evolving world of drones and robotics in public safety aviation through 20 fantastic conversations with leaders across public safety from the fire service, law enforcement, EMS operations, wildlife management, and more. We explore the challenges, advancements, and the critical role of technology in enhancing emergency services operations. A special thanks to the sponsor of the Smart Firefighting Podcast, WS Darling Company, for making this podcast possible. Enjoy the show. We are here live in the third podcast of this mini-series of the Texas Robotics Summit. The last podcast was with the two guys from FDNY. Now I have three wonderful-looking gentlemen. You just can't see them. This is audio only. Alongside Dr. Raymond Shea from NIST, Jordan O'Dell from NIST, and Saeed Uzat Ulaf, PhD student from Texas A&M Corpus Christi. How you all doing?
Doing well.
Very good.
What brings you guys to the middle of nowhere, Burnett, Texas?
Well, for me, the biggest thing was the opportunity to see you in your suit. The amazing suit that you wore last time I saw you. What happened?
Didn't make the suitcase. I had to leave it all for these new podcast microphones that I'm using.
Ah, this is why it sounds so good. But no, it makes sense, though, because, of course, we're here. The reason we came, of course, is because this is the application, right? We have the red dust that kept the suit at bay. We have the hot weather, which kept the suit at bay. You know, we have all the wilderness. And this, you know, just as it doesn't work so well for the fine suits that you wear, it also causes havoc for these robots. And so we're here. We brought some students with us as part of the IEEE RAS Response Robotics Seasonal School. So supported by the Institute for Electrical and Electronic Engineers Robotics and Automation Society. And the whole idea behind this is to give, you know, students the opportunity to interact with the folks who are going to be using their technologies. And the cross-pollination goes both ways, right? The students want to learn more about the application, but the end users, this gives them an opportunity to talk to the people who are developing these cutting-edge technologies that are going to be saving their lives in 5 or 10 or 15 years' time. And being able to tell that story in both directions is really, really powerful.
So just to kind of set the stage a little bit, and granted, we are in a little bit of elevated platform here in this wonderful yurt that we're sitting on. I'd love to hear like a little 60-second high-level overview of Jordan, Saeed, and Raymond. Maybe Saeed, you start, and then we'll throw it to Jordan, and then you, Raymond.
So I'm Saeed, and I'm doing PhD in Corpus Christi, Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and my research is on the autonomous navigation of, you know, the drones. So what happens is, you know, like these drones, for example, if we look, so in the near future, we'll be having, you know, drones delivering packages from one location to another location. So think of it, the Amazon, the USPS, the Walmart. So they will have, you know, these drones carrying packages from their warehouses to the consumer premises. So in order for them, for these drones to, you know, share the same space, you know, work in the same sky, so they need to have, you know, like very robust in terms of, you know, safety. And that's, you know, where I thought, okay, I need to know more about these safety regulations and those things. So then I came here to this workshop, you know, to learn more about the safety of the robotics.
Well, Saeed, I feel bad. I'm most excited for probably a Domino's pizza delivery via drone. So I'm holding out for that.
Domino's today, was that delivered via drone?
It was not delivered via drone. I'll have to get all of that.
I'm underwhelmed.
Yeah. I'm Jordan O'Dell. I work alongside Raymond at NIST in the Boulder campus. And I primarily work on communication systems, interoperability of those communication systems, and how you might test the key performance indicators of those systems, mainly to be able to compare those systems in an apples-to-apples way and understand what their weaknesses and strengths are and when would be best to implement which ones.
And then I think for Raymond, I think the better question is, what does Raymond not do?
Evidently, Raymond does not wear suits anywhere near as well as you do. No, so I'm at NIST. I'm actually at Johns Hopkins University, but 100% time with NIST, where I'm the uncrewed aircraft systems research lead at the NIST Public Safety Communications Research Division. I've actually been in this role for about half a year. Prior to that, I spent over a decade working with the standard test methods for response robots. So I believe you've already had some people on your podcast talking about some of the tests that were developed in that project for you know, measuring the performance of both the various robots as well as the operators. And in fact, you'll see the test methods that were developed under that project all throughout the event here. But that was sort of my past life, and that's continuing, of course, with the wonderful work that my former colleagues are doing still. Right now, though, I'm working with Therese Manley, who has just walked up to the podium.
The one and only.
And you know, we're doing a couple of things. The first thing we're doing is we're running competitions that push the state of the science for uncrewed aircraft systems for public safety applications. But also a bit of a passion project of mine that I'm very thankful has found a good home here, and that is developing greater awareness for cybersecurity and AI risk management for public safety, specifically around uncrewed aircraft systems. And it seems like a sort of a weird matchup, but you've got these systems that are highly connected, especially with things like drone as first responder, where they're connecting right into your dispatch system. They're connecting into things that are downrange, where they're streaming all of this data into networks. You also have these systems that have increasing levels of autonomy, right? Those of us who remember flying model aircraft and model helicopters in the old days, where the only gyroscopes in the system were mechanical, were the flybar. In fact, I remember as a poor grad student, you know, the model helicopter I had didn't even have a heading lock gyro or collective pitch, cyclic only. Trying to keep that thing stable was a pain. The things that we have nowadays stay in the air due to very good control loops, but also a decent helping of AI, helping them along, which is all well and good. But when you come to rely on them, managing the risk that they pose to the mission is also also means visibility into how these things can fail and how to put in place the policies and procedures to manage that. So that's kind of where we are now. I guess my background, you know, I have a PhD in machine learning for robot behaviors from the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia, as well as I studied both communications engineering and computer science. So I've got a bit of a background through all that. But I also spent many years, as in the previous project, coming to events like this and actually getting an understanding of what the end users are doing. You know, realizing how little it is that us researchers know about how these people do their thing out in the field, and seeing this is how technologies fail to make that leap, or make that leap poorly, out of the lab and into the real world. So, you know, one of the things that I'm, you know, hoping to do, both being here and being on your podcast here, is to try and foster that communication, right? Talk to your researchers, foster that communication with the folks who are developing these technologies that might not come online for 5 or 10 years. You know, help us with the outreach, you know, even right down to high schools. We have high school competitions where we're trying to foster, again, this understanding of what the end users are going to be doing. Anyway, I've been monologuing a lot and sort of, you know, derailing your podcast here.
That's what it's for.
Yes, I know. I've drifted off the suit topic. So, by the way, who on the podcast has seen Kevin in his marvelous suit?
I mean, if you're listening to this, give it a like or give it a comment if you've seen me in a suit. It's only happened once. It might happen again. Once every blue moon. Raymond actually posted a photo of it.
I think on my LinkedIn. Yeah,
that was appreciated. Yeah. It's always easy to get excited about all this technology, how drones and robots and all, you know, AI and all these tools can be used. But I think I want to take a slightly contrarian approach with all three of you from your different perspectives, from the autonomous navigation standpoint, the comms, and sort of the, you know, and Raymond, obviously you're talking about testing and everything you're doing with drone integration, but like, why do we need to be cautious as we are integrating these technologies into the public safety? And what happens when comms fails? What happens when drones have a collision unintentionally? What happens when some of this technology ultimately goes wrong? So sort of an open-ended question, but I'd love to hear kind of a cautious, contrarian thought from all of you on the work that you're doing. Yeah. So, okay. You want to go first?
So I would say what happens is you get my job. So my group in NIST is the Public Safety Communications Research Division, and we're born out of 9/11, when comms didn't work, when all these different fire chiefs showed up to respond to the incident, and nobody could talk to each other, right? And so this was obviously an issue, so much of an issue that it spurred congressional action, which is an own act of itself, right? So it's definitely a big issue, and it's definitely recognized.
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of the autonomous navigation, so for example, if a drone has supposed to go, you know, safely from one location to another location, and in the meanwhile, if something goes wrong, it's going to be a disaster. Then, for example, it can go. So if it was intended to go, you know, like directly or avoiding, you know, the the airport, the commercial airport, and for some instance, you know, the algorithm gets failed. And what happens is, you know, enters the or hit any commercial airplane or something, it's going to be a disaster then. So eventually, I mean, these algorithms, they have to be very, very robust, and they have to be very, very secure and safe.
So when things go wrong is always a little bit of a tricky question, because at that point, what do you mean by things going wrong, right? And this comes back to the push that I'm making towards risk management, right? If something goes wrong that you expected had a good chance of going wrong, you're doing something that you know is dangerous, but you're doing it because you have an understanding that if things work, there's a big payoff. That's great, right? Public safety takes risks all the time, calculated risks, right? So, as I sometimes say, some of you folk are allowed to drive the wrong way at high speed down Main Street. This is not minimizing risk as far as traffic is concerned, right? But it's minimizing risk in total of things going bad if you don't get to where you need to go in a hurry. So it's about managing that risk. It's about having your lights and sirens on, and then having the societal culture that joins you in that risk management. When they hear the lights and sirens, they know that they ought to be careful that someone is doing something more risky and they need to get out of the way, right? So when something goes wrong is tricky. You know you're taking a bigger risk, right? You know that there is a perhaps an elevated chance that an accident might happen if you're doing this, but you're willing to take that risk to prevent something else from going wrong. If an accident does happen, you have an understanding that, okay, something went wrong, of course things will happen. So there's a little bit of a difference between that and something going wrong that you definitely were not expecting, right? Because now you have to figure out, how do you do the root cause analysis, if it's a big enough thing, in order to figure out how it happened to make sure it doesn't happen again. That's also part of your risk management, because it's managing your risk going forward based on risks that you took in the past. And that's one of the big things we're doing here is that how do we put in place the guidance to determine whether it's appropriate, when it's appropriate to insist on that. Some of these new systems coming online, you can't do your root cause analysis like you could if, you know, the brakes failed on your vehicle, right, or your throttle got stuck open or whatever the case may be. So how do you incorporate these new technologies into the same risk management culture that deemed it appropriate for your personnel to take these other risks that you take, that you have to take in your daily jobs? So that's one aspect of things going wrong. But there's another aspect of things going wrong that I think is very valuable for what happens here. And that is I often say, and this is, you know, this is a quote that's very, very old, and that is the most advances in science aren't eureka moments. They're, that's funny moments, right? It's when things don't go the way you expect, and often when they go wrong. And a big chunk of this is in the development stage, giving technologies the opportunity to go wrong in ways that aren't going to be a catastrophe. And that's one of the reasons why I like to bring researchers out to places like this, where we have an environment that looks like what they're going to see, but if their technology goes wrong, it doesn't leave someone stranded, right? It's a pretend search scenario. It's a pretend rescue. They're allowed to fail. They're allowed to have things go wrong here so they can do that root cause analysis, figure out what's going on, so that when their technologies are integrated into systems that are used by those who save our lives, that they're not going to go wrong in that way. So, you know, the whole contrarian about things going wrong. No, things going wrong is a source of information. But of course, things going wrong also breaks down into many different parts.
So a lot of different ways we could take that. And I guess I appreciate that context in terms of, again, the contrarian mindset of things are going wrong. But then again, Raymond, you brought up a good point of it's actually great to be in these environments where we're pushing things to the limit, where we are breaking things and seeing things failed within safe, controlled environments to hopefully try and apply that to better outcomes for first responders. And I think a lot of what we want in this podcast is how can we continue to advocate to use technology to create better outcomes, make better decisions, create better data creation and display opportunities to make more efficient first responders. I'd love to dive in, double click a little deeper into all of what you're doing. How is the work that you're doing? The ultimate end goal is what I just said, making first responders better, faster, safer, smarter. How is the work that you're doing accomplishing that? And maybe what are some stories or nuances within your work right now that people should be aware of that maybe they aren't?
Well, I think in a nutshell, primarily what I can say my claim to fame is standards and measurement, right? And that's very much the NIST mission. And without either one of those, there's no way to mark progress. There's no way to mark failure. And so as we have these new technologies, it's pivotal, I think, that we have benchmarks to test them, benchmarks to reach towards as we develop further with those technologies. And you have to have unbiased, unpolitical folks doing that. And so that's what I see as kind of the role I feel on a day-to-day. And maybe a good representation of that, a little bit outside the robotics realm, unfortunately, for me, comms guy. But advent of FirstNet, right? And that black SIM for public safety to give them priority preemption on a network. It's all about providing tools with the latest and greatest technology for public safety, which often isn't on the bleeding edge, and being able to maybe, you know, scrub the blood off so there's a little bit less risk, as Raymond has talked about.
Well, I don't have anything to say about this, but the thing is, I mean, the first responder has to, I mean, whatever resources they have, they just, I mean, as soon as the technology grows, okay, so they'll be having, you know, like more resources and more of these technological advancements. So, yeah, I mean, just try their best, you know, something like this.
Doing the best you can with what you got.
Yeah, exactly.
Raymond, what about you? You've only got your hands in a couple pots, but some ways of how, something that maybe people aren't aware of, the work that you're doing and ultimately the, you know, either the story behind the journey or the ultimate end goal of some of that progress for first responders.
So one of the major sort of pushes I'm trying to do right now is actually not so much down in the technical level, right? I mean, we do technical stuff as well, of course. But where I'm most interested right now, where I think we can have the most impact, is actually looking back up the chain, right? And that is looking at how we can help those who are developing and updating, you know, rules, regulations, policies, procedures, and making sure that they are appropriate and at least aware of new risks, right? As technology changes, the way that you develop your policies and procedures to manage those risks, if you try and apply the old style, what ends up happening is that you spend resources and you take risks elsewhere in order to manage risks that maybe don't exist anymore, right? On the other hand, there are new risks that have come up that you may not have visibility over and that you're not managing, right? And a great quote that I heard recently is that risk is like a water balloon. You squeeze it in one end, it's going to pop out the other end, right? So, you know, where sort of my sort of efforts are directed right now, a lot of that is towards how do we better inform those who are making these policies and procedures to, from, you know, from a technical perspective, but how do we help them to develop, you know, policies and procedures that are technically actionable and meaningful to the current state of technology? You know, the part of the problem with that is, of course, that these, you know, rules, regulations, policies, and procedures, they move at a fraction of the speed of technology, right? You know, things are being made now that are going to continue to be in force 1, 2, 3 decades hence. Now, if you imagine how much technology has moved in the past 30 years and all of the risks that don't exist anymore, or at least aren't as prevalent, but now all of the new risks, and you try and regulate them with the same thing. I mean, that's how we're getting some of the issues that we're having now in broader society in terms of risk management and the like. So, you know, around public safety, that, you know, that's all the more important for a community that is used to managing risk explicitly. Right, because you have to do risky things in your job and you can't get away from that. So you have to manage it and you have that culture. So this is why I think this is actually a great place to start. It's much easier to teach. It's very hard to teach people who aren't used to risk management how to manage risk. So whereas I think your listeners are much better tuned than most at how to manage risk. So I think this is a great place to start with this journey. So on that note, we need input. We need to know where are your risk management policies, procedures, guidelines, and so on not keeping up? Where do you think they're not keeping up? You know, what kind of guidance would help? You know, where do you need the advice from the propeller heads like us? Where do you need our guidance? How can you guide us to help you with that?
So we're here at the Texas Robotics Show, and I mean, right here, you see a bunch of red clay on the ground. There's drones buzzing in different distances, and there's a lot of different technology. You see all these different robot dogs walking around. But what are you three doing here the next couple of days? Are you involved in any exercises? And, you know, is there anything in particular that you're really excited about either here or just excited about with, the technology here in general?
I think there are a lot of, you know, cool robots, the aerial robots, the dogs that you mentioned, the spots. So it's really fun. You know, I'm looking forward to see and explore, you know, more robots. I had the opportunity to control, you know, like to play with one robot dog for like some time, and it was fun. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to be learning more and, you know, to explore more cool things here. Yeah.
Largely, we're looking forward to the UAS challenges that we're hoping to put on in the future. And so it's really important, in my mind, to understand the state of that technology currently, how it's being implemented, and the challenges being faced by the community at large. So we know how to design our challenge and, you know, what we should put most focus on, what we should maybe get rid of, and how we can direct our challenge going forward.
I'm looking forward to making connections between people who haven't connected, right? I'm looking forward to the spark of, wait, I didn't know that. From any side, right? Doesn't matter who, where it comes from. I'm looking forward to people seeing the posters that we've hung up that have a lot of information about our research projects and staring intently at them, thinking about the possibilities going forward. You know, I'm really looking forward to how these connections build things in the future. At the end of the day, you know, these students that we brought, their technologies are going to have to be transitioned out, right? I remembered when I first started, back during my PhD, when I first started coming to events like this, and I was looking at problems that were facing your listeners and going, wait a minute, this is a problem that's been solved in academia 30 years ago, right? This is a textbook thing. Why is this still a problem? And you go to the manufacturers and you go, well, why isn't this thing in your product? You know, I wouldn't even set this as a final year project, right? This is too simple. What's going on? And they say, well, no one's asking for it. There's no commercial case for it. And then I talk to the end users, the public safety folk, the firefighters, and I go, well, look, this is a technology that could stop you from, you know, losing all of this time, energy, or so on, or, you know, helping you save lives. Why aren't you asking for it? And they go, what, huh? We've never heard of this thing. So, you know, making these connections means that, you know, folks who are, you know, who can make use of these technologies learn about them. It means the manufacturers can realize that there's a demand. And by the way, it also makes a good hiring opportunity, right? Because you can just, these folks can just, you know, employ these students, you know, when they graduate and have them help develop these technologies. You know, it helps the students get their things transitioned out, right? It makes a much stronger case when they're going for their rounds of funding and investments and all this, that's and the others to understand that. So I'm looking forward to these connections being made, and I am looking forward to seeing when your suit comes out.
It's going to be some kind of suit, whether it's the formal suit, the birthday suit. No, I'm just kidding. Or something.
We do. There is both the lake and the quarry, so we could also see you in your swimsuit.
Yeah, swimsuit. That's probably the most. I did bring
this. This will be the Smart Firefighting Podcast swimsuit edition.
I did bring the swimsuit. But I hear at the safety briefing they were talking about all the different things that could unintentionally kill you.
I'm from Australia.
Yeah, this you're is right.
You're being pansies.
I'm from. I live in Chicago, where it's like, you know, the biggest fear you have is hitting the deer when you're driving a car.
Yeah, we got kangaroos for that.
Yeah,
they bounce.
Definitely. I don't really have many fears, but little insects that can just kill you one little bite.
At least here, you don't have drop bears.
Drop bears.
Yeah, drop bears.
What's that?
Well, they said they look like koalas, but they're carnivorous.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's totally a thing. I mean, they're especially adept at going after American tourists.
Mm. Okay, so I should never go to
especially
Australia.
Especially the ones who run podcasts.
Oh, okay, I'm definitely not going to Australia. But maybe Tasmania. I'd go there. They don't have drop bears there right here.
They have Tasmanian devils.
Oh, okay. Those are sweet. So final parting thoughts. Mic drop, you could say. Kind of, I guess I'd love to know any sort of a favorite quote of yours, a question, a comment, really any sort of or a suggestion to someone. It doesn't even have to be necessarily related to technology or Texas Robotics Show. You know, really any sort of final thoughts, comment, question, quote that any of us could leave us with here today.
Right, I'll try to open up here. I think I'll mirror what Raymond's already said in that being a science communicator is incredibly important. You know, I'm a much more technically focused myself, and it's what I get most validation out of. But being able to bring your ideas and your inventions to the mainstream public and to public safety folks is just as important as being able to have technical skill to make the widget, I think.
I would say whatever you are doing is a good job. So just keep doing that and informing the people, especially the first responders. And yeah, that's it.
So the final thing I want to leave with is, and actually now I'm going to mirror what Jordan said, was if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. But I sort of want to use that as a thing to keep in mind, but to unpack it a little bit, and that is, if you're trying to compare things, be it new products to old products, new procedures to old procedures, you need to have a way of measuring that change. Otherwise, you're potentially, you know, taking on additional risk or making change that's not necessary or not helpful. And measurement science doesn't have to be, you know, exactly accurate. A big chunk of measurement science is knowing when you can be inaccurate and get away with it, or when it's still meaningful, right? But the whole, you know, if you can't measure it, you can't improve it, I think is the thing that is the quote that I would want to leave with, that I found very, 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 very useful more generally.
Well said. Well, Saeed, Raymond, and Jordan, you're all doing such fantastic work, and I appreciate what you're doing. So just keep going strong. I look forward to collaborating more this week and in the future, and hopefully seeing you again in regular suits, swimsuits, or whatever suit it may be. And
I did bring my swimsuit.
Okay. Then you know what? We're going to go swim with those gators over there.
Sounds good.
What's the worst that could happen?
You're surrounded by public safety.
Yeah. Someone could, you know, the guys from NYPD, NYFD could drop us one of their rescue tubes and save us. We'll be fine. Yeah. All right, guys. Till next time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this mini-series created at the Texas Robotics Summit, hosted by Granite Defense. Make sure to put this amazing event on your calendar for 2025. For this podcast episode, what'd you like? What'd you think? Drop us a comment on social media and let us know your favorite quote. Thanks for all that you do, and have a great day ahead.